Cat and Moose podcast. I'm Cat.
And I'm Moose. This is a true life podcast where we explore the quirks of being human.
Well, hello, Cat.
Hello, Moose.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey.
Everyone went crazy with their names on Zoom today.
I mean, we really did.
So Kat has the cat and an at sign.
A K and the at sign.
Get it? Kat. Sarah says, Producey Sarah. She's adorable with her curls.
It's very humid today, and so thy curls are curling.
And I am Moosey Moose.
So, wait, let's go back, Producer Sarah. So how does that correlate to your name on your screen?
It doesn't.
I love that we started off strong, guys. Like, here yeah. I am, like, da-da-da-da-da, and then there's complete silence for, like, 6 seconds.
Well, I will not be silent about how I was listening to, I want to give you a compliment, Sarah. I was listening to this past week's podcast, and we were talking about a certain subject, and Moose asked you to comment on the subject, and you just said, no, I'm not comfortable in this conversation. And I was just so impressed, like, hearing that back. Like, in the moment, I was like, oh, Sarah, you know. But, like, hearing it back, like, you really held your ground and you pivoted. Like, you were like, I'm not comfortable in this conversation, and I like to have cereal at night. And it was just such, like, a great display of boundaries that I just wanted to applaud you for how you handled that, especially with two pushers like Moose and me.
Total pushers.
Well, thank you.
You know, Sarah would be a great mom because she's excellent at the art form of distraction.
Mm.
You know, like, I could be like, you know what? Like, I'm pissed off because da-da-da-da-da, and I could be going off on it. And, like, she'll during the time that you've shared something, she'll have made, like, this gourmet sandwich, and then she'll just offer it to you with, you know, and it, like, immediately, like, oh, this is what we're doing now.
Yeah, it's called redirection.
Well, I'm glad to know that it's something you've learned and that you're using.
Absolutely. It's not just with children.
Yeah, it's with adults with small attention spans like the other two on your screen right now. That's amazing. So Moosey Moose, why the change of your name today?
Oh, it rhymes with juicy, and I like to be called Juicy Moosey.
Juicy Moosey. I think that needs to be your personal fan club.
I like that. Hey, we can make a whole patron level if we need to. Do you like my new moose on the shelves behind me?
I do. And I wanted to ask about the shelves behind you. Like, I haven't seen those before. Where did they come from?
Producer Sarah put them up, and they have a picture of the three of us that's adorable. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of other new things up here. And it's nice to have a backdrop.
That's so cool. And I've known the gumball machine to be in your ownership for a really long time. So I'm glad to see something familiar up there. And is there a metronome up there, Moose?
Yeah, it's Sarah's. And that's not my gumball machine.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's Sarah's. Oh, she's back. Look. She shook her head like she wasn't going to let you get away with that.
That's my gumball machine.
Well, wait a minute, though. Like, that has not been in your possession for, like, years?
No, I've never had a gumball machine.
Well, what am I thinking of?
Are we starting to merge?
So maybe I'm remembering that from a different life, like we talked about last week.
Exactly.
Gosh, I feel really dumb.
Maybe you were a gumball machine in your past life.
People always putting money in your belly and you have to deliver.
Boom, 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 boom. Hey, who wants a red? Who wants a blue? Who wants
You'll
white?
You'll never know.
Okay, so speaking of putting money in your belly and getting something out, I have a question, or I rather have a quest that I'm on for spring and summer 2021.
Okay, let's talk about it.
So I'm officially on the other side of my 90 days of sobriety, which we all know contained some sobriety and some not. And I'm glad that I did it and learned a lot in the process. What I am on the search for now is I am on the search for the ultimate light, very, very little sugar summer beverage, because I'm kind of tired of wine. And I don't like the new, like, what are they called? Like Trulies or, yeah, you know, Bud Light, Bud Zero seltzers. I don't like any of those. Like, I need a refreshing summer drink.
So do you want it to have alcohol in it?
Preferably to have an alcohol option. Yeah.
Okay.
Because what my mom would say is you sure could have some water and that would be nice.
Oh, goodness. First of all, I'm surprised to hear that you're tired of wine, because like that's like saying a dog is tired of a bone. I don't even know what that means. Do you like ginger?
Yes.
What about, like, is Jack and ginger like a winter thing? I know most whiskeys are winter.
Yeah, I feel like just because it's like a dark liquor that it is, I really enjoy the taste of bourbon or whiskey. So I could maybe consider like a ginger. What would go in there? Ginger beer and lemon.
Yeah, or just ginger ale and a, you know, something. A ginger ale feels like summer to me, but I also think tequila feels like summer. So I think we start with tequila as the base note of this cocktail that we are speaking of.
Okay, awesome. Our base note is tequila. And I like tequila all right. I don't really like I don't really enjoy sipping tequila very much. Like, I don't like the taste a lot, but like, I'm good if it's like a margarita or something. I just don't want it to have a lot of sugar, because that throws my diabetes for a loop.
Yeah. All right. So maybe our listeners could write in and give us the perfect summer beverage.
Well, I would love to hear about the perfect summer beverage from our listeners. So you guys write in hello at catmoosepodcast.com. Sorry, I had to burp. That was so gross. I'm sorry. You guys write us hello@catmoosepodcast.com. And while you're at it, I am curious if any of you remember when Zima was the craze. Do you remember that stuff?
Oh, hell yeah. In college, I wasn't a big drinker until after college. However, Zima was the drink. And here's the deal. If I have any kind of acid reflux now, it's because of me putting Jolly Ranchers in Zima and having like four at a time.
Yeah. I was thinking about when I was thinking about the perfect summer beverage, I was like, I need something like clear and bubbly. And it made me think back to college as well and remember putting Jolly Ranchers in Zimas and how I would love to change flavors in between drinks. You know, it's like this one's sour apple and this one's watermelon and this one's cherry and this one's grape. And then all of a sudden you've had like four Zimas and you kind of want to die.
Oh, yeah. Like it just... Yeah, it's like it's especially you. It like spikes your sugar.
Oh.
And then you know that feeling. I mean, you know better than anyone, but there is nothing worse than that feeling when you have had too much sugar. Like it feels like you're going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. And I am very accustomed to that feeling, having juvenile diabetes and having moments in my life where my blood sugar has been way too high. It is really, really a horrible feeling.
Okay. I have something that is going to blow your Professor Cat mind.
Oh, I can't wait. I have something for you too, but I don't think it's as much of a mind blow as whatever you're going to say to me. So what do you got?
All right. So I love like random facts that are shocking. And I was reading up on the Empire State Building. No idea why. Went down a rabbit hole and couldn't get out. And did you know that the spire, do you know what a spire is?
Is that like the pokey thing on top?
Yep. The pokey thing on top. It was created so that air... What are they called?
I feel like our friend Ruthie's going to write in and say, did you guys record at half speed today? It was created So that air.
I was trying to. It's so worth it. Just give me a second, guys. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Not that. Not that. Okay. The fact that I would like to share, sorry for that, thank you for the Jeopardy music, is the iconic spire, which is on the top of the Empire State Building. It was designed as a port for dirigibles. Do you know that word?
No.
Dude, it's a airship.
What?
Hold on, let me show you this picture.
Oh my god. I should have known this was going to be something UFO related.
No, not an airship like that. That's what blew my mind. Let me show you this. Okay, following completion of the design, what was intended to be a 1,050 foot tall skyscraper, construction chairman and former New York State governor Al Smith decided to tack on an additional 200 feet for good measure. The extra height was not allocated for supplementary stories, but for a spire that would serve as a mooring mast for the docking of airships. Though Smith asserted that his decision was one of practicality, citing the fact that the closest port for dirigibles, I don't know if I'm saying that right, was in Ocean County, New Jersey, many suspected it was for Smith's desire to strip the 1,046 foot tall Chrysler Building of its world champion height. So I will post the picture, but it literally shows this giant balloon, air balloon, like think Goodyear, but okay, even bigger.
So like and the blimp.
Yeah, it can literally connect to the top of this thing and just stay there.
Why would you want to do that?
I don't know. I'm just telling you, this thing is real. The other thing you need to know is that in 1945, a B-25 bomber crashed into the Empire State Building.
Oh my gosh.
And one other thing you need to know, a woman jumped from the Empire State Building's 86th story and lived.
What?
Ask me how.
How in the world? Did she parachute?
The poor weather actually saved the building from tragedy 34 years later. In December 1979, Bronx resident Elvita Adams, we'll say, visited the Empire State Building with the intention of committing suicide. The 29-year-old leapt from the 86-story observatory approximately 1050.
What? It is so entertaining watching you try.
Adams only fell about a dozen of those feet, however, when a strong gust of wind forced her onto a 2.5-foot ledge on the 85th floor. Where the security guard pulled her through the window. The freak occurrence saved Adams' life, leaving her with only a fractured hip.
Oh my gosh. So this woman contemplated suicide, made a plan to jump from the 86th floor of the Empire State Building to plummet to her death, and fell about 12 feet and was caught by a ledge. Did she not see the ledge?
And then the security guy is just there waiting for her.
Huh. I'm just wondering, like, if you make such a well thought out plan, do you not see a ledge 12 feet below you?
Well, I think she thought she was going to jump past it.
Oh.
I'm not sure she made like a really serious plan.
Right.
Okay. Can you see this? That the airships can dock on this thing?
Oh my gosh. That is the most bizarre thing I have ever seen in my life.
Me too. And then look at this. This is how they connect.
And it's like a giant zeppelin. Is that a man?
Yeah.
At the top of the spire?
Yeah.
Oh my God. You know how I'm so afraid of really big things? I would be terrified by that.
That thing is huge.
Like, I would be so terrified.
I don't understand how the thing doesn't just collapse onto the building. Like,
I don't
the nose is what's connecting it.
And it's like a big gust of wind blows. And how does that not just like pull the building down with the blimp or something? That is really bizarre. Have you fact checked that?
Again, I'm not saying that his idea progressed to a level that it happened, but either that is a, I don't know. We're going to have our listeners tell us because I don't know.
So that photo, you think that photo is manufactured?
No, I don't. There's people in the photo.
So then it did happen.
It did happen. Whether it ever happened again, maybe he did it to prove that it would work, but I don't know. I've got a lot of other fun facts for you, but I don't want to front load them here. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I have to tell you, Moose, when you share stuff like that, it is my absolute favorite. Like I don't know how in the world you come across that kind of stuff. And it is so entertaining to me. It's like, I do kind of want you to front load us with it just so I can be purely entertained by you today.
Okay. I've got one more then.
Okay.
The inventor of Pringles. Okay. Or sorry, the Pringle can, not Pringles, but the can of like, hey, let's sell potato chips in a stack. Would you believe me if I told you in 1966, he actually had the idea to put snack chips in a can instead of tossing them in a bag. And he was so proud of his intention that he was buried. He put his ashes in a Pringle can when he died.
Did he put his own ashes in the Pringle can?
Well, I don't think he did, but someone did. And then they buried it.
In his next life, he put his old ashes in the Pringles can because he was so proud of his past life achievement. That's amazing. Do you know what flavor the ashes got put in?
I'm hoping it was sour cream and onion. I don't know, though. But I got to tell you, if I had the option when my mom passed away of a Pringle can versus a $300 urn, my mom would have come back from the dead and said, like, pick the Pringle can.
Uh-huh.
And in all honesty, when my dad died, his ashes are still in a box, which they need to be freed. But he probably would have appreciated a Pringle can over a box as well.
Hmm. Do you think you'll ever scatter your dad's ashes?
Yeah, he used to say, I want my ashes scattered over all the bars that I frequented. And I'm not doing that. Sorry, Charlie, but you're dead and I get to decide. So then he would kind of laugh and then say, like, or on Kentucky Lake. So I think my sister and I should put them on Kentucky Lake. But then, like, seriously, like, I'm not trying to be weird, but like, do fishes come up and like chomp on that?
I don't think so. It would be like thinking, it would be like wondering if fishes come and
I love
chomp
that you
on.
Just repeated that I said fishes because I'm pretty sure that's wrong.
I'm not going to correct you. I'm pretty sure it would be similar or not terribly different than, like, you know how on the end of a cigarette, the ashes like happen. And if you like flick the ashes in a lake, like, I don't think the fish would come and eat those ashes. I think they would just kind of disperse and disintegrate. Right.
But are they colorblind like dogs? And is that true?
I don't know.
Because, you know, they say dogs are colorblind, which I don't believe.
I don't know if I believe that either. And I don't know that anybody can actually scientifically prove that, can they?
I mean, unless a dog has talked, I don't think so. But here's the thing. It's like, honestly, think about, did you ever have a goldfish? Gosh.
I had fish growing up. Like, I had an aquarium growing up, but I don't think I ever had a goldfish in particular.
But you had fish.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want you to think about, like, sprinkling the flakes.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that different. So if I was a fish, I'd be like, oh, it's dinner time.
Well, we're going to disagree over this.
I hope so.
So flakes are nutrients that have been basically, like, dried out, right? Like, almost like freeze-dried or whatever. Ashes are the remains of carbon that of something that, like, the energy, the life, the chi, the whatever has already left the thing, and the only thing that remains is the ashes. So I don't think there's any, like, nutrients in the ashes.
Well, I know. I'm just saying, like, if somebody handed you one of these fake beers that I like to drink, if somebody handed you that, if you didn't look too much, you'd be like, oh, it's a beer. Let me grab it and drink it. So I guess my point is, and I recognize this is a good 15 minutes of the podcast. However, I'm not saying they're eating my dad because I think he's gone. But I think if they went up there, they might do a nibble thinking it is somebody's feeding them from a flake can.
Yeah, I think that is something we should do, an experiment. Who has an aquarium? Can we come to your house and can we feed your fish some of Andrea's dad's ashes as well as some fish food and see what happens?
My sister is dying right now. Here's the deal. You guys, everyone just calm down. My relationship with my dad was all about humor and he would be laughing right now if he was here with us. So, yeah, sorry about that. Also, one other thing, one other fast, fun fact from Moose, Janis Joplin, in her will, which she died at 27. So it's sad that she even had a will, but I'm glad she did. She left $2,500 to her friends to have a party after she died.
I love that. I love that. I want to do that.
Me too. Like, hello, you're already gone. I understand you got to mourn. You got to go through therapy. Probably a very long time. Very long time. Long time. However, Janis Joplin, hello. Like, she's like, I'm gone. Have a party, guys.
I love that. And I wonder what caused her to pick the figure of $2,500.
Well, I would think in the 70s that that's like 50 grand or more.
Adjusted for inflation, $2,500 in 1970 would be equal to $17,273 in today's currency.
Wow. I was going to say, like, I feel like if I wanted a party to be thrown after my passing, I feel like based on my friends and their taste, and this includes you, is I would need to leave at least like 25K.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because we would be... I would rent out the whole Kane Prime, steaks for everyone. Kat loved this buttery Chardonnay. Please sip it and give her affirmation even from the grave, even to the grave.
Yes, I'll take it. Thank you for already planning my afterlife party. Man, this is really going downhill. I have a fact for you, Moose.
Okay, please share.
Okay, did you know that Earth is the only planet in our solar system that is not named after a god?
Really? I hadn't thought of that. Uranus is a god?
Apparently so. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it is, but.
Wow. Okay, let me think. So, really? So where did Earth come from?
I don't know. I didn't do that kind of research. We don't plan these things.
Well, now you're just supposed to make it up.
Please enjoy this thesis titled, History of the Entire World, I Guess. By Bill Wirtz.
Hi, you're on a rock, floating in space. Pretty cool, huh? Some of it's water. F*** it. Actually, most of it's water. I can't even get from here to there without buying a boat. It's sad. I'm sad. I miss you. How did this happen? A long time ago, actually never, and also now, nothing is nowhere. When? Never. Makes sense, right? Like I said, it didn't happen. Nothing was never anywhere. That's why it's been everywhere. It's been so everywhere, you don't need a where. You don't even need a when. That's how every it gets.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to Google it. Where did the name Earth come from? Okay, the name Earth is derived from both English and German words, Eartha and Erd, respectfully, which means ground. Oh my gosh, we couldn't have come up with something better than ground.
You know who named the Earth? It was the people who wrote the Tao. They named the Earth. It had to be.
Why?
Because it's so simple.
Oh, yeah.
It's so simple and so practical. An ancient Taoist said, what shall we name our planet? We shall name it dirt, the thing that we stand upon. You know, like that seems so, that makes so much sense to me.
Well, if we would have named ours after, what are they called? A god?
Yeah.
It would be called God or Allah.
Are you saying that we're as smart as the ancients?
No, not at all.
Okay, so ultimately, German astronomer Johann Elert Bode.
It might be Johann. I don't know, but it might be Johann.
Whose observations helped to establish a new object as a planet, named Uranus after an ancient Greek god of the sky. Bode argued that as Saturn was the father of Jupiter, the new planet should be named for the father of Saturn.
Wow.
Clearly, Germans do not use the word anus like we do.
Yeah. I mean, we have to pronounce things here in America. Like, there are certain parts of the country that, or the world, that call the word Versailles, which is V-E-R-S-A-I-L-E-S. In Kentucky, it's where I'm from originally, it's Versailles.
Versailles. Absolutely. Way to win, Americans. Way to win.
Hey guys, we have created an easy way for you to support the Cat and Moose Podcast.
You can go to our website, catandmoosepodcast.com, click support us, and check out our affiliate links. We've got all kinds of affiliates, starting with Amazon,
Instacart,
Ollie,
Allbird Shoes,
Dinner Dates,
BarkBox,
Gravity,
Audible,
Skillshare,
Embark Dog DNA Testing.
So if you're going to check out some great shoes from Allbirds, or some dog food through Ollie, or get a BarkBox, or listen to a book on Audible, get a Gravity blanket, shop on Instacart, you get the idea, right? Give your dog a DNA test through Embark, or turn time into inspiration with Skillshare. If you want to do any of that, go ahead and help out our podcast in the meantime and do those things through our affiliate links.
Go to catandmoosepodcast.com and click on support us. Thanks.
Okay, so I was hoping that I could taunt you by showing you my notes to get you to ask about the picture that I wrote my notes on this week.
Can I see it one more time? Mm-hmm. Is it Mark Cuban?
No.
Oh, it's a tennis player.
Uh-huh.
Is that, I only know Andre Agassi. That's it.
Okay, this is Roger Federer.
Oh, I know Roger Federer.
I thought you did.
Tell me about him.
Well, I wanted, you know, every week I write my notes on a printed out picture of something that's been important to me. And on the last podcast that we recorded, it was a little too raw for me to talk about it. And now that it's been a week and I've done some exercise around this thing I'm going to talk about, I feel really actually quite excited to talk about it. So the picture that I printed out is Roger Federer doing this thing that, if you have ever watched Roger Federer, you're probably familiar with. He does this thing after he makes a good shot, or after he wins, he'll go, "Come on!" And it's this really, like, really passionate, emphatic, like, "Come on!" And I wanted to tell you about an experience that I had in my last body-mind therapy appointment that really has been one of the most useful tools that I think I've ever learned in my therapeutic journey.
I would love to hear. I feel like right here, Sarah needs to create a little bumper that anytime we talk about going into therapy, it's like
body mind therapy.
Okay, so tell us about body, a tactic, if you will.
Yes, a new tactic that I learned in my therapeutic process. And so I basically went into my body mind therapist and I said, she's like, "What are you going to talk about this week?" And, you know, she basically was like, "How are you?" And I was like, I'm really hurt. I'm hurt because I didn't get a thing that I wanted. And I think I talked about that a little bit on the last podcast. And I said, and I really am ready for that, like that hurt and that desire for that thing and my frustration with myself for even having the desire for the thing. Like, I just am ready for it to be gone. Like, I'm ready for the story that keeps playing in my head to change and be something else, because, like, it's just kind of driving me crazy. She's like, "Okay." And so we talked a little bit more, and then eventually I got on the table. And
so are you naked on this table?
No, no.
Okay. Just
no.
Checking.
The body mind therapy that I do is a fully clothed modality. So I am not naked on the table. I am fully clothed. And so she's like holding points in a certain pattern. And because I've been studying some of this stuff, like every like fourth or fifth point she would hold, I was like, "Wait, I think I know what you're doing. Like, I know that point. That's bladder point number one on the bladder meridian. And that's going to help with clarity of vision and la, la, la," you know? So I had a couple of moments like that. One thing that she did is she said, "I would like for you to think of something, whatever it is, think of something that you have accomplished recently that you are really, really proud of." And I said, "Okay, great." And she said, "When you think of what that thing is there a noise or an image or a color or a thing? Is there something that shows up in your mind that really, really can can personify how proud you are of yourself. And the thing that popped in my head was Roger Federer going, come on. And she was like, what does it sound like? And I said, it's really loud. And she's like, that's cool. She's like, what does it sound like? And I said, come on. And she was like, okay, awesome. And so that really embodies that thing that you're really proud of. And I said, yeah, I said, it does. And she said, okay, so now she goes, I'd like you to consider being in an environment, and maybe it's a, you know, a tennis court, and, you know, or maybe it's the environment where this thing that hurt your feelings happened. I want you to imagine being in that environment and experiencing the thing that you wanted that you didn't get, the thing that kind of hurt your feelings. And I said, yeah. I was like, I clearly told you at the beginning of this session, I don't want to think about this anymore. Like, I don't want to have to relive it one more time. It's what I'm kind of thinking in my head. And so I was like, okay. And so I thought of the thing and I was like, womp, womp. You know, it's like, here's the thing that happened that hurt my feelings. And she's like, I'm wondering if you could get Roger Federer to walk right up to that thing and go, come on. And so I did.
Okay, hold on. Are you willing to give like even the slightest hint in what category of life you were let down so that we can lean in a little closer?
Yeah, it was something at school. It was something at school that it makes me almost tear up thinking about it. Whew, I have not healed from this yet. Yeah, it was something that happened at school that I was really looking for some particular affirmation that I just didn't get. And I really, really felt like I deserved it. And I felt like the direction from which I should have gotten it, like, knows me well enough to go like, hey, I'm going to offer you that. And I just didn't get it. And that's fine. It's not that person's job to do that for me. So Roger Federer walked up to that moment that hurt my feelings and said, come on. And it felt so much like for the first time, like I had power over that thing.
Yeah.
I had power over, it's like, yes, this happened. Yes, this is real. It wasn't like she led me into trying to like make it go away or make this thing not hurt my feelings anymore. It was not that. It was fully acknowledging it and getting right up in its face and going, come on, you know, and it felt so good. And so now when I've gone through different things in the past couple of weeks, that have, you know, been things that could potentially hurt my feelings, that imagery has come back into my head. And I feel like I have been just a more empowered, stronger, less sensitive. And I don't mean less sensitive as in like less empathetic, because I don't want to lose that sensitivity. But like, I can be so sensitive that like the tiniest little thing will hurt my, you know how I'm like that. I get my feelings hurt easily sometimes. And I just thought it was a really cool tool that that she shared with me, and I thought I would share it with our listeners in case you've got a thing in your life that, you know, has really got you bummed out or whatever. It's like, can you visualize something that you're really, really proud of and you're a badass and you know it? And like, what is your Roger Federer? Like, what is your thing? Is it a baseball bat? Is it, you know, whatever? And can you walk right up to that thing that hurts your feelings? And can you say, come on, whatever your version of that is? Does anything come to mind, Moose?
Yeah, like I have this memory when I was in grade school and I really wanted like a new pair of shoes for track and field day. And I remember my mom buying me these Payless shoes because that's what we could afford, but they were brand new and I was fine with that. And I remember, like, that's the image I have, is like, it was very, not traditional, what's the word, like ritualistic, is what kind of what you're talking about, like putting a ritual in place that you can go to when you need to like sort of fire up that inner person. Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, mine is like a picture of me as like a little kid with a red, white and blue headband on and like totally wearing 80s like socks up to my knees.
Yeah.
But like, you know, going for a little run. Or I was a, I don't know if you guys know this. Just let me not skim past this. I was a blue ribbon in the softball throw for many years.
Yeah, you were.
So yeah, I don't know what my like battle cry is. Now it sounds more like, come on, Moose, get your shit together, you know? Which is like my way of doing it. But I hear what you say. Like, I think it's important to put those little rituals in place so that you have a response and you aren't just completely crushed.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I think it's important to have that too. Like I've had a couple of things go on since then that would normally, like, I would just kind of like tuck my tail and go like, that hurt my feelings. Womp womp. And like, right as they happened, it was all in my head, right inside of my head. I went, come on, you know, and I walked away like kind of unscathed, you know. It's like, I still felt that there's almost like a muscle memory there of like, okay, things like this hurt your feelings. Things like this make you feel this way. So it's not like it just like vaporized it for me, but it just helped me to tackle it in a new way. And I thought it was really awesome. So thank you. You know who you are, and I don't think you listen, but thank you for giving me that tool.
Yeah, seriously. Thank them and keep on walking.
And since I got a little teared up, apparently Little Miss Sensitivity is pretty sensitive still. I wanted to tell you that in this season of life, I have really experienced a lot of lacrimation.
You're trying to pull a moose on me. I know what you're doing over there. So you have been experiencing a lot of lactation.
No, a lot of lacrimation.
Lacrimation?
Lacrimation.
Oh, like you're making those macrame things that you hang on the wall.
No, I'm doing that with my mom tomorrow when my sister has ear surgery.
Gosh.
We're literally going to make some macrame plant hangers tomorrow.
Oh, fun. Sarah will take one of those.
Yeah.
Lacrimation. Okay, I'm going to go out on a limb here and just try and figure it out.
Okay.
I feel like it has a lot to do with Lycra. Like the stretchy pants. And so lacrimation sounds like when you pull up stretchy pants after you haven't worn them for a while to go on a workout and they just like, and they fall underneath the roll. Like you think you've got them secure, but the lacrimation makes it go under your belly button.
That's amazing. That's every pair of pants and jeans that I own.
Me too.
Plenty of lacrimation about the pant roll. Okay, so do you want to take a second guess? Because that's not quite it. That could cause lacrimation. Does that give you a hint?
Oh, I'm going to say lacrimation is the study of shame.
The study of shame can definitely produce a lot of lacrimation.
Okay, I give up. You win. Go.
Okay, so I told everybody last week that I got this new, it's not new, it's a very old book about acupressure points and the definitions of them and what they do. And it came with this set of note cards. And so for school this week, I have to have, there's like 15 points I have to have memorized. And so I was like, I'm going to use these flashcards to try to memorize the points. And it's got everything from like what the Chinese symbol is for the specific point, what the point is called. Like this one up here is called shoulder well, you know, it's at the top of your trapezius. And it's like, well, that makes sense. There's kind of an indention right there that, oh, if you get into it, it feels like a nice deep well. So anyway, as I was reading these cards, like there were several that said this could potentially cause lacrimation. And I'm like, what is lacrimation? And so finally I was like, Kat, you can choose. You get to choose. You can look up a word in the dictionary and no longer not know what this word means. And it means an excessive production of tears.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's so weird. Like, talk about synchronicity again. I was just texting with a friend of mine who is going through a lot. And she texted me and said, today has been really hard. Something about she cried thrice. And it made me laugh so hard. Oh. She'd cried three times already today. Okay, the excessive, say it again.
It is not exactly like the Merriam-Webster definition, because Sarah usually gives us that, because I will put it through some sort of bent that my brain understands.
Merriam-Webster defines lacrimation as the secretion of tears, especially when abnormal or excessive.
It's basically excessive tears.
Wow. So you've been through that lately.
Well, just in this whole past season, it's like, I feel like I've cried more in the past 2 years of my life than I think I've ever cried. And it's been good. Like it's been really good. And there's something that happens, and someone smarter than me can, you know, post on our socials about this if you want, but there's a chemical that gets released when we cry. I forget it's like cortisone or cortisol or I don't know, gelatin. I don't know what it is. Something happens when I cry.
KY jelly. I mean, it's some sort of something that comes out of
it. Yeah, watermelon jelly cubes, something like that. Yeah. But so when we cry, a specific hormone that has been built up releases. So it really is, it's physiologically a really good thing to cry. It allows you to express things. So I learned the word lacrimation this week, and I wanted you to be proud of me, Moose.
Well, I am proud of you, and I'm proud of you for going in every single week and doing the work. I was talking to a friend today who is just up against life right now, and things are really hard in like every single area of her life. And yet in her career, she's like thriving, like mm-hmm. she's at the top of her career. Mm-hmm. But I'm not kidding. Everything else is falling apart. And we got talking about like how what it takes to do the work. Mm. And she was talking about a family member of hers and just said, like, I don't know why, but this person does not want to get in there and do the work. Like, they would much rather chill and, you know, and, you know, cover it up with whatever thing they want to cover it up with. Mm. And I just want to honor you. And I know everyone, all three of us are weekly. Excuse me, I almost choked on my own something. Lacrimation is what I choked on. But the three of us are weekly on like a path, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes people in our lives don't quite understand it mm-hmm. if they haven't done the same work. Right. And it doesn't mean everyone's on their own journey. So it doesn't mean we're ahead of anyone mm-hmm. else. But, you know, just like giving money to investments, you know, stocks and investments or Bitcoin, like over time, those things compound.
Right.
That's what happens, you know? Yep. And it's like something that could have been the smallest breakthrough for you. Now you've sort of unlocked that mess. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about last week, this idea that even though you find the trigger, it doesn't mean it goes away.
Right.
Right. However, I do think when you have those moments where you're like for you, I think what you just described is you're drawing boundaries now is what you're doing. Like that's the, oh, come on, is sort of a boundary for you to be like, you know what, that hurt. But I think I'm actually cut off that part of our relationship because you don't owe that to me and I don't actually want that from mm-hmm. you. And so you're learning like, okay, this is a boundary that I need to draw in order to protect myself. Mm-hmm. I think that's huge.
Thank you. I am pretty proud of it. There's another boundary that got drawn for me this week that I thought was going to be really uncomfortable. And I found it to actually be really freeing.
Is this where you called me and said that you apparently aren't allowed to swim naked at the Y?
How did you remember that?
Sorry, that wasn't true. Just kidding.
I was like, did I do that? Was I really like out of my mind? And did I do something like that? And no,
good news is you did swim naked, but it was in your own pool. So,
yeah. Come on. I can swim in my own pool. I get to choose.
That's right. Okay. What boundary was drawn for you?
Well, it's not really a boundary. I was trying to find a transition into this other thing that I was going to say. So I made that up. So anybody listening is going to go, wow, Kat, that doesn't make any sense. Something happened this week that I didn't expect would make me more comfortable in the subject matter that I'm studying. And I've had to do all these practicums for my classes. So I have to work with other humans in the world, and I have to do body work on them. And, you know, I'm specifically right now studying acupressure, craniosacral therapy, and I just got through the first basic class of Jin Shin Do. And so these are the things that I've been practicing lately. And in every single one of my sessions, well, there's one that this didn't happen, but in every other one of my sessions, my client fell asleep.
Oh, well, let's talk about that. Was that awkward?
Yeah, super awkward, because I thought what I'm doing must not be having any effect on you, such that like you're so bored that you're like, let me not like lay here and feel good. Let me fall asleep. Like that's what my brain tells me. You know, it's all about me. It's all about me and what I'm not doing and I'm not good enough and all of that. That's my brain's, you know, neural pathways that have been built that way for a really long time. And then where I went to is I was like, this person probably never gets to slow down, and they're finally getting to slow down, and they're slowing down in a place that is a safe place to them, because I've done all the things to try and make the environment safe and private, and this is confidential, and all of that kind of stuff. So they actually get to relax. And then I arrived upon what I think the truth is, that I think it's somewhere in there, in that they feel safe and relaxed. But one of the things I read in one of my books is that when you enter into deep REM sleep, that is when your body has the utmost opportunity to heal. And I think that these modalities allow for not only relaxation, but relaxation so much that you get into that deep sleep. And then while you're sleeping, I can do acupressure on you that moves energy up and down your body's meridians and what they call the miraculous flows. And so your body is like super cooperative, because you're not awake resisting it at all. And so I actually found it to be really freeing, that it's like, okay, now the client is asleep, and now I'm really going to move this energy this way to provide an environment for more balance and healing. So that's been kind of neat.
Well, I think it's great. I think that I was going to ask you, after you shared the first thought, I was like, and then after you unraveled that pit of hell, what did you decide? Because our first response I've learned at Enneagram training is often reactionary. Mm-hmm. Exactly what you said, you know, based on these neuropathways that are the easy way. But what mm-hmm. we want to do is go backcountry, you know, and see like, wait a minute, let me actually unpack this. But I think you're right. I think it's a huge compliment. Like, I've only fallen asleep once in a massage, and it just happened to be one of those Thai massages where everybody's out in the open in the same area. And it was with Sarah and another friend of hers, Elizabeth. And I had just gotten back from a trip, and I was jet lagged. And I not only fell asleep, but like, they had to shake me. And I'm a hard sleeper, but like, I am so aware of everything that I would never intentionally fall asleep because, you know, of this reason. And I was snoring my brains out. Like apparently I woke up to everyone kind of laughing, and I was like, oh my God, like, what have I done? But I think it's a compliment, because I was relaxed enough, like you said, that I didn't have to hold on or control anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that such an amazing feeling?
Yeah. My last massage I had, honestly, it's the same lady that I go to every time. And I booked 90 minutes, and I could not relax. Me and my entire time, I was so aware of my body, and I was tensed up. I just could not drop my arms. I was just having a rough fat day or something, and I was struggling. But yeah, I think it's a compliment.
Oh, well, thank you for that.
Okay. Do you know how people like use the phrase, like, just be yourself?
Oh yeah. You be you.
Girl, you be you.
Be your own snowman.
Be your own snowman at least has a little bit more
character.
Has a little bit more character, because it feels like it's also about boundaries. Mm-hmm. But I was on a group Zoom today with like 40 people, and we were presenting this new artist to radio. And, you know, I hate like little cliche things, but one of the radio people asked this person, like, you know, how do you feel like, you know, how can you separate yourself from other artists, and like, da 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 da. And his response was, be yourself. But what he shared was so impactful for me. And, you know, I love a good deep dive. And it got me thinking about the idea of being yourself. And, you know, if we can step away from it being this trite phrase, like, I'm really curious what that would actually look like lived out.
Hmm. You know, this is kind of a recurring theme, Moose.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. We talk a lot about, especially you talk a lot about, what would it look like if you were fully your authentic self in every moment, in every situation of life. And we talk about, there's a lot of reasons that, you know, are physiologically and psychologically very able to explain why it is very hard for humans to do that. You know, it's actually a form of survival. So what did he say? Like, what did he say that kind of flipped the switch for you?
Well, he's this really charismatic guy. And you can tell, you know, like, we were joking with him, and he was wearing Gucci sandals. And I said, you're about the only artist in our world that could wear those and pull them off. And he laughed and he said, it's all about confidence. And I just like, and then afterwards I was like, God, where did I lose my confidence? Where did I like leave it at the bus stop when I was 22? And it just got me. I mean, I have confidence, but I'm more confident in front of a Zoom screen than I am presenting in front of a bunch of people, you know, just because like body issues or whatever. But it just and you're right. It's a reoccurring theme, which now makes me feel like we've talked about it too much.
No, we don't. I don't think you can talk about this too much. I think that it's a lot of the reason why people listen, because I think people identify with that. I think our listeners identify with that. It's like every single one of us struggles with that in some regard, some more than others.
Yeah. It just, it made me think, like, if you were to have an entire day to yourself, if I literally said to you, okay, Kat, Friday, you aren't doing any work. Like, not only are you not doing any work, I need you to leave the house by 9 o'clock and be in your car. And I need you to not come home until dusk. So like 7-ish. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I know you, and I feel like, and this is all about me, but I'd much rather put you on the spot. I know you, and because you're all about other people, I think that would be really hard for you to figure out what to do that didn't involve other people.
Okay, so that's like kind of the rule of the trip, because I'm like, I know what I would do if I had basically, you know, like 14 hours or something like that to do whatever I wanted with a day off, and it would involve other people, yourself included. So, but this is a thing where I would have to go and do a thing or be in a place or something like that by myself.
Yeah, you just have the day to yourself, and you're you don't have your phone. Mm. You've got directions if you need it. Mm-hmm. But what would you do if you were going to be yourself for a day?
If I was going to be myself for a day.
I just realized that the green jar you got me for Christmas is on this cabinet.
Yeah, that's such a great jar. It's got so much fun stuff in it. I think that what I would do, Moose, is I think that I would somehow in there get my favorite salad from North Italia. Their Tuscan kale salad with shrimp added. I would get that, and that would be my food for the day. And I would have ice water, Diet Coke, and Chardonnay in case I, toward the end of the day, wanted to have a Chardonnay to kind of go, cheers, self, you did good today. But the thing that comes to my mind is I think that I would go to the park that's close to my house where sometimes I'll meet my bodywork therapist there. I think I would go to that park with, you know, my blanket and tarp and all that kind of stuff. And I think that I would really dork out over these new flashcards that I have.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Okay. What would you do beyond that? You've got like 12 hours.
I would nap.
Okay.
I feel like I'm never allowed to sleep as long as I want to. Whether that's in the morning, whether that's during a nap, like I feel like I'm never allowed to really just take a nap and wake up when I want to wake up. It's like, it's, you know, it's either a responsibility or a meeting or the dogs or something. It's like I would take a really, really great nap.
Okay. So would you ever consider taking, going and like doing that by yourself and giving yourself an entire day where you didn't have to check in? Everyone knew you were off, and it was just about like your healing and whatever it was you wanted to do that day. Mm-mm. Okay. How can I get you to yes?
I think, and this is such a great exercise because it is really peeling back the layers of like, how much do we love ourselves and have self-care and compassion? Because what my immediate answer was, is I need you to incentivize me. And I shouldn't need to be incentivized to do something like that for myself.
What would an incentive look like to you though? Because maybe I've got that in my pocket waiting to incentivize.
It would probably be like having fun time with either like really, really, really close friends, or, you know, you get an extra, you know, session this week or something like that. Like, I think it would, that something like that would incentivize me to go, okay, if there's a light at the end of the tunnel, I'll do it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, you know, I went to Florida in January, mm-hmm. And spent almost a week by myself. But I did communicate with people. I did check in on work stuff or whatever. But I've just been really thinking about, like, okay, that hit me today with the be yourself. And then I just stuck with being by yourself. Like, mm-hmm. that stuck in my brain for a minute where I was like, why are we so, some of us, not everybody, but like, I love downtime. I mm-hmm. love quiet. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really, really important to me. And I don't take the time when I think about what I love to do. I love to write. I love podcasting. I love taking the time to really get down all of my thoughts. Like, you know, I love to go deep into a hole and like, mm-hmm. you know, okay, that happened. And then where did that take me? Like, mm-hmm. I love those exercises, but I find it interesting and not surprising that we don't take the time to do that unless there's a therapist sitting in front of us.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, right. I go from therapy appointment to therapy appointment. And, you know, yes, sometimes you have homework, but like, why from that, say I have my appointments on Thursdays, you know, from Thursday to Thursday, why am I not taking like 2 hours? It didn't have to be a whole day like we talked about, but 2 hours and just going for a walk by myself with my phone in the car so that I don't look at it. I mean, I think we're afraid of actually, like you said years ago that you were afraid of success. That was mm-hmm. your biggest fear. Mm-hmm. It's always stuck in my mind. Mm-hmm. But like, honestly, like if you look at that behavior, we're kind of afraid of graduating.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, what does it look like on the other side of this? What was it that you called the ultimate hell or something a minute ago?
Oh, that you were unraveling. I don't know. The devil's hand. I don't know.
It was something like that. It's almost like that whole idea of, you know, the elephant being tied to a stick, you know, from a baby elephant to a giant elephant. And it's like the elephant is trained, you're tied to the stick and therefore you cannot get away, when actually the elephant is way stronger than the stick that's stuck in the ground with the string attached to it, you know? And I think that that's very similar to us. It's like, I think that we are so used to the narrative that's going on in our heads that it's almost scary. I think it is scary to consider spending a considerable amount of time outside of that. And it's certainly scary to consider that I have the ability to be in that environment for myself. I don't need a tour guide. I love that I have tour guides. I love that I have people in my therapeutic space that help me to explore that. But it's a little scary to go, uh-oh, you can do that by yourself. Like that's really, really scary, because our life in some ways has contained very safe spaces, but a lot of times life is really scary. Like, life does hard things. Like, it's not easy to be a person. Like, it's hard being a person. So I think it is really, really scary. What scares you about it?
Well, I love that you called our therapist tour guides, because that's, mm-hmm. I mean, we all have our own titles in our company, and yours is the Sherpa.
Yeah.
And like, that even makes me want to encourage you more of like, hey, like, be your own Sherpa. Mm-hmm. Forget being a snowman for a minute. Like, and I say that again, all of this is about me. It's just way easier to point you out for fun. But I have been really grappling with that of like, okay, I don't want to have to go into my therapy appointment and my therapist like recap last week's, you know, because sometimes I'll be like, can you read the notes to me? Because I know she takes notes, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and sometimes that's just because like, I really can't quite remember a week ago. And then other times, like, I feel really bummed about that, because I'm like, I could have worked on that some more. And, you know, I told mm-hmm. you last week that I did have Sarah lead me through mm-hmm. some of it a little bit deeper. And I think that was the first time, and granted, I still had a tour guide, but it was the first time I went like, oh my gosh, like mm-hmm. how much, speaking of compounding your healing, I mean, imagine if every day we took that 30 minutes, mm-hmm. you know, not just to meditate, but to really ask ourselves questions that could change some things in our lives.
Yeah, I think that's a great I don't want to call it a challenge. I think that's a great, is it like an admonition? Like
it's an invitation.
Yeah, it's a great invitation, Moose. Thank you for that invitation. I'm going to take it.
And you don't even have to come up to the front of the altar and drop to your knees and give your life away. You just have to say, there it is. Maybe I'll take it. Maybe I won't.
And to be covered by a modesty blanket.
Yeah. And then you get a purity ring at the end.
Special thanks to our producer, Sarah Reed.
To find out more, go to catandmoosepodcast.com. Cat and Moose is a BP production.